They'll teach you history, yeah. But they'll teach you
what
they'll
what
teach
they
you,
want you to yeah. think.
What they want you to think is,
and none of it has ever been true.
Shay, good guy here, your boy. It's been a while. I've been off and on, but I'm glad to see people checking in, still listening to the podcast. I definitely hope you're enjoying it. Please, when you get a chance, hit your boy up. Shay, good guy, being black on earth. Let me know what you think of the podcast. So, this is really not an episode. This is more of an update. It would be episode 22, sorry. But it's more of an update. It's just, I wouldn't put another. This is actually, I'm just doing this straight from the phone. Literally sitting in my closet. So that you guys can get some decent acoustics. And just a couple of things came to my mind. One, I'm kind of pissed off. I had a fight with my wife. That wasn't really a fight over, you know, money and kids and the things that you usually fight over. It was literally over the things that trigger us. The things that she does that trigger me and put me in a state where I'm really not thinking straight. And the things that I do and say to her that have the same effect. And we had to work through it. We had to come up with like a code word that we could say when we know that we're triggered, but we don't have the words to try to communicate that. And it turns out that I had recently discovered that, I don't know how many of my listeners are really into like spirituality and things like that. If you're into religion, depending on the type, especially if it's one of the big three, they tend to not get into more internal energies and things like that, right? You're dealing with God and how he affects you as opposed to dealing with the God within you and how that affects you, your higher self and your lower self and these types of things. They don't really have that kind of language in the big three religions. But for those of you who are not, I recently discovered that one of my bigger wounds, now if you're into that, you understand like a wounding. It's sort of that thing, that trauma or series of traumas that happened to you as a child before you were fully developed that you then created these mechanisms of defense for. And that's pretty much how you survived, you know, in the society. So I recently figured out that my greatest wound was over connection, being connected, feeling part of something. And it literally drove my entire life, probably up until the point of even making this podcast right now, just needing that sense of connection. I will say that for the most part, I have learned to cope, if not heal, that wound of connection. And how did I realize that? Well, I realized it in having a conversation with my estranged father, who for the first time in the 40-odd years that I've been alive, he finally actually opened up to me about why he wasn't there for me as a child. And I've been talking to my dad now off and on for probably since I was about 16, or maybe 18, as far as like letting go of any negativity and animosity that I had towards him. And I've been, ever since about 18, I would at least call him on his birthday. And maybe up until about, 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago now, I've been calling him a little more often than that. And I can't say that we've gotten close or anything like that because he's old school. He's very terse, doesn't talk much. Certainly would never talk to me about his past. He would always say that was none of my business or he doesn't want to go down that road and that kind of thing. Whereas for me, I was looking for that connection. He assumed, and this came out recently, he assumed that I was like looking almost for him to repay me for all those years and be this thing, this father image that he assumed I conjured up in my own mind, that almost like even some of it was like a get back. He had this idea that I thought of him as like a low down, dirty, no good, deadbeat, good for nothing scoundrel, right? He literally said that. He thought that that's what I thought of him. And he thinks that a lot of people think that of him. And I was just like, no, I never thought anything of you along those lines. I just wondered why you weren't around. And when I say wonder why you weren't around, it wasn't that my father lived another state away. He literally lived on the other side of town. And that town is a small town. It's Syracuse, New York. It takes 30 minutes to go from one side of the town to the other. And as a kid, every once in a while, I would literally just walk to his house. So he's 15 minutes away driving, if that. So I always just wondered why he wasn't around. In addition to that, he literally raised my siblings, my older siblings, for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, at a very poignant time in their life, because they were teenagers at that time, preteens, teenagers, when they really needed that guidance and connection. So, and they love my dad, and they constantly talk about him and tell stories about him. And it's a person that I never knew. Meanwhile, they also knew their father and had a connection to their side of the family. So they would often mock me and, you know, say, you're a Jones and we're Solandis and things like that, you know. And I don't quite look like them. My mother is West Indian with a Venezuelan. She's all mixed up. She got Venezuelan in there on one side. So she's like, you know, part Hispanic. And then her mom is mixed up with Irish, African. I believe there's even some East Indian in there somewhere. So my mom is all mixed up. But if you look at her, she looks like a very Afrocentric looking black woman, you know. Big lips, wide nose, high cheekbones. That's my mother. And my father, pretty much the same, except he actually has finer features than my mother. Thinner lips, finer nose, darker skin. And I forget why I was even saying that. Why was I going through my lineage? My mother, what was I saying? Oh, I was saying that my mother's first husband, which she had my siblings with, is even a lighter skinned man. They're both from Trinidad, but his family is also from Venezuela. They're Solanis, but they were originally Salazars. They actually changed their name. So did my family, actually. I don't know, that's a common thing amongst people of that era. I'm not fully sure what that's about, but regardless, so my siblings actually look very typically Afro-Latin, even though they're not. I mean, they are. Technically, they are. They don't speak Spanish or anything like that. But because of that mix, if you see them, they have the what they would consider finer features, lighter skin, in some cases, softer hair, softer, less curly hair. So they would tease me on all those differences with just within the household. And I didn't care. I honestly did not. I was never self-conscious about my looks. So, you know, especially my African looks. I really, as a young age, don't ask me why, don't ask me where it came from. I've always had it and it never left me. Praise the gods. I've always appreciated the way that I looked and I didn't have a problem with that. However, I just didn't have a connection to my side of my African-American side of the family. And who I look like on my side. And they had uncles and things that they could point to separate from me. Of course, we had our parent, my mom's family in common. But, you know, when it came to fathers, I had nothing. And I didn't have a connection. I noticed that I realized in that moment when he was saying why he wasn't around and thinking that I thought all these ugly things of him, and I'm just going, no, I just wondered why you weren't there. I just wondered why there was this hole in my life, you know, that everyone else around me seemed to have, and I didn't. Oh, in my household, obviously my friends didn't have their pops either. And I realized, like, holy cow, like, I literally went around looking for connection because I also had a very, very, to this day, dysfunctional family, so I don't get along with all of my siblings. They don't get along with each other. None of us get along with my mom. They are connected to my Trinidadian side of the family. I was a little too young, so I don't really have a connection with my Trinidadian side of the family, nor do I have a deep connection with Trinidad in the sense of a national pride. So I was, and then of course being here in the States, Black Americans didn't see me as Black American. Because I had what they considered a Trinidadian accent, which a Trinidadian would say, he don't have no Trinidad accent. He talks like a Yankee. He talk like a Yankee boy. That's what they would say. So I was completely, if you can just imagine that feeling, of growing up in Trinidad, being born here in a Trinidadian family, your African-American family is not to be seen. You don't have any connection to them whatsoever. You go to Trinidad, they don't see you as Trinidadian. They don't see your mother's lineage. They just see you, even though you look just like your Trinidadian family, because I look a lot like my Trinidadian family, I'm still a Yankee, right? Go come back from Trinidad to the Americas, and it's like, well, you're not black either. You know, and then you're not, and in my family, it's like, well, you're not really us. You're not really part of this family. So I realized that in that moment, literally in that moment, and this happened exactly 1 week ago, that I realized that I have just been searching for a connection to family, to people, for some understanding, for some camaraderie. And I've been through a lot. I'm not even going to go through the list of things that I went through in that, because that's not the point. The point was that I get triggered when I feel like I'm connecting with you, and then you do something that shows me that we're not. So, and it could be something simple. It could be like we're having a conversation and like, yeah, yeah, I get it. Yeah, sure, sure, I get it. And then suddenly the conversation's over, and I have this idea in my head, because you conveyed it to me, that we have an understanding. And then you're like, no, actually, I didn't. I was just saying that. I didn't know what you were talking about. Stuff like that would trigger me, which I guess would trigger anybody. But it really triggers me. Like, I get really mad when I feel like you lulled me. And it could just be a projection, but I feel like you lulled me into a sense of understanding and connection that wasn't there. And even the way that I communicate is very constantly affirming. You understand what I mean? Do you know what I mean? And I end up explaining. I just realized so many things about this wound. And to the point where my entire career, ever since I have been working, has been, even side jobs, pickup jobs, have all been something to do with connection and communication. Like, sure, communication. And if I were to one day give you all the stories, it would be profound. So at least that was what I realized. My wife has always known what her wound is, because she's really, like, she's into that. She's a healer, a spiritualist. And so she knows that her wound is abandonment. So anything that gives her the sense that I'm mad at her, I'm kind of done with her for now, like, triggers her. So we realize that anytime she doesn't understand what I'm saying, or anytime that I sort of cut her off, we trigger each other, which works really horribly. We have a great relationship, by the way, but when we're triggered, it works really bad, because my wound triggers her wound, and her wound triggers my wound, if you think about it, right? My wound is constantly feeling like I'm not connected, that I'm disconnected. Well, her fear of being abandoned causes her to disconnect, right? And my fear of not being understood causes me to abandon. Because if I feel like, oh, you're not really feeling me, or you're trying to, you know, then I'm just out. I don't need you. Right? So whereas she's more like, hold up, don't leave. Like, you know, so there's a difference between connection and abandonment. I think it's similar, certainly. But I think abandonment has more to do with, you can feel connected to a person, but then they just sort of bail out on you. And like, they're not really there for you. They leave. But you still might have an easy time connecting with people, being understood and understanding them. And whereas I don't have a fear of abandonment. I don't care if you leave. Because I've gotten used to that kind of abandonment. But what I need is some kind of connection. And I've sought that in my younger life, which has benefited me through a lot of religion. A lot of religion. Which I didn't find connection there either, so to speak. So anyways, we were just having that conversation. And realizing what triggers us. And we actually came up with a method for us now to deal with that. In that moment when she realizes, okay, I've just triggered her. Or I realize she's just triggered me. Or I realize that I'm triggered in that moment. She realizes that she's triggered in that moment. We came up with a code word. Sort of like the S&M. Was it S&M? I think it's S&M or BDSM, whatever it's called. Where they had a little code word, you know, it's like to stop. So we have a code word whenever we know that we're triggered, and we just say the code word, And then that person will then, so my wife will then go into a series of things that she knows will make me feel understood and connected. So if she realizes that I'm triggered, or I even vocalize that I'm triggered, we say the code word, then she will go, I'm sorry, okay, what did I say that you didn't understand? Or can you repeat what you said so I can understand it? And then we can go from there. And then when she's triggered and we're aware of it, and I'm not triggered enough that I can deal, then I will go, listen, don't think that I don't appreciate you and that you're indispensable. I absolutely need you. I need you in this moment. You know, what can I do? You know, something like that. And then for her, she needs touch and things like that. Whereas I don't need touch, especially when I'm triggered. When I'm triggered, don't touch me at all. When she's triggered, she wants to be hugged and held. So we had that discussion. It was a very huge breakthrough for us, for that major snag that we have in our relationship, because we don't fight over the kids. We don't fight over money. We don't cheat on each other and any of those, typical problems that crop up in a marriage. But we do have little things that annoy us and can build up. And obviously, she's not perfect. I'm not perfect. So she still has ways that bother the fuck out of me. And I have ways that bother the fuck out of her. But we realize that, holy shit, that's a large part of them. That's who they are. And we just have to learn to cope with it and help that person, you know, heal from that way, whatever it is. Or we just learn to deal with it, period. So I thought that was cool. That was a really cool advancement in our relationship, like a leveling up for our relationship that I thought I should share for all of you guys out there, just to remember that, you know, sometimes your girl gets mad at you, and I know women are kind of trained, and maybe innately are so to be passive-aggressive, and men can be passive-aggressive too. And sometimes we just have to recognize when we're triggered, when that person has said something, done something that has put us in a state where we cannot be ourselves anymore. We have turned into our defensive self, and whatever that defense is. So I know for me, when I'm triggered, when you trigger my connection, I cut you off, and I'm just done, and I don't think much about it. When she's triggered, she runs to you. She looks for something to fulfill that, to fill that hole. I don't do that. I just go out by myself, whereas she needs to go and be with me or with her friends or something that can allow her to feel like she's not abandoned. So I think we need to watch out for that. Like, know and understand what are your triggers. Some people have many triggers. What are they? You know, what are the things that can set you off? And certainly if you're in a relationship, you have to be very sensitive about what your partner's triggers are when you've triggered them. And the tricky thing about being triggered is that you can't often communicate that. You can't say, listen, what you just said really pissed me off. You're just mad. And anything they say or do is just probably going to make you more angry. And then your attitude from being triggered is making them either afraid of you or angry with you as well. So we came up with a code word. Our code word happens to be Merkaba, which is a word, which is just a random word. It was on a card. I saw it. And it means something to my wife. That's Merkaba means, I forget what Merkaba means, but it means something. You guys can look it up. I think it's with a K, Merkaba. So that's our code word. When we're triggered, I say Merkaba. When she's triggered, she says Merkaba. And then in that moment, we're supposed to pause. We're not going to try to work it out. We're not going to keep trying to talk it out. We're going to just stop for a moment and just let the space breathe. And then we have come up with a system that works for me to bring me out of, helps, I know helps me bring me out of my trigger. And then and then I go through a series of things that she has informed me allows her to come out of her trigger, right? So since I don't like touch when I'm triggered, I have to become first untriggered. And since she likes touch when she's triggered, I have to be the first one to become untriggered in order to touch her, hold her and give her what she needs, right? And then we can both come out of our trigger. So that was amazing, I thought. And I thought I would just share that with you guys. Hopefully it's helpful to someone else out there. Swinging over topic, still talking about relationships and things. I work with quote-unquote at-risk youth, inner-city kids, typically in the foster care system, you know, don't really have a lot of contact with parents, tend to not be doing very well in school, engaging in risky behavior, the whole nine. And we're gearing up to do our summer program that we do every summer, whether I do it with one group or another. This happens to be the same group 2 years in a row. And I really like this group, especially now. They just pulled in a new, this group, this is for a summer camp that is purely academic. It's like a replacement for summer school. And they bring me in to do a, you know, like life coaching, life skills, right? That kind of thing. And some, I guess life skills, I do martial arts as well, life skills. I would consider that a life skill. Last year they had they separate them, boys and girls. Last year they had I didn't know at the time. I found out at the end that they had another girl doing the life coaching for the young ladies. And it wasn't until the very, because if I had known from the beginning, I would have asked her to do more of a collaboration, not every single time, but here and there. To collaborate, because the boys need it and the girls need it. They need to learn how to engage each other in a healthy way, because they just don't get it. And when they're out there, it's a free-for-all. It's the jungle, right? They do whatever. But this year, they're bringing in another lady, an older woman who is huge in the community, does a lot of community work with young girls exclusively, and so I'm going to get a chance to work with her, and from the jump, she was asking for us to do a collaboration, so I was like, this is going to work out. So I love these people. It's great, great group of people. One of the ladies is actually a fellow Trinidadian. She's a lawyer, and a gal lawyer, in fact, so she advocates for children in the foster care system. And we were having a discussion today, a Me Too discussion, and it was really on, you know, what's happening now when we're living in a social media society and a text message society where touch and eye-to-eye contact is almost not even just secondary, but it's almost like an annoyance, an inconvenience to have to call you or go see you, right? It's just so much easier to send a text. It's so much easier to video chat or what have you, you know, or just tap everything through social media. And then here in this Me Too age now, where it used to be that you see each other more often, but now you don't. And then also you add Me Too to it, and there has to be even more, but so now more communication is required of you in order to engage. In a society where you're not communicating anymore. So we were discussing that. And I was saying how funny it is that we're coming into this transition for men and for how males and females engage. And I'm not in, you know, this is any sexual relationship, how they engage. Which is funny because I find that all this time women have... the stereotype of women, the archetype for femininity, and the and some people would even say the nature of a woman, is to be subtle. You know, is to a lot of the things that they communicate are nonverbal. Whereas for a guy, it's the opposite. Everything is very vocal. Everything is very hands-on, if you will. Generally speaking, and that's the way that men are brought up. It's the archetype for a man. And some people say it's in a man's nature. So now we're switching over to this situation where a man can't make a move until the woman gives consent. Whereas before, the woman wasn't vocal. She didn't give consent vocally. She would give signals. And women are taught that Your woman wants to have sex, she doesn't say, let's fuck. No, she cuddles up to you. She puts on her negligee. She rubs her butt against you. It's these signs, these signals. You will never in your life, generally, hear a man go, man, I was trying to give this girl the vibes, but she wasn't picking up on my signals. Men don't talk like that. I went over there and I kicked her. As a matter of fact, you do anything less, you don't have any game. Whereas a woman is like would say, yeah, I gave him, I was flirting with him, I was giving him all these signs, didn't he get it? And we already know as men, we tend to hear a lot from women, how come you didn't just know? But I thought that I showed you when I did this and I did that. So here it is already, there is a culture that is generations old, whether it's nature or nurture, of women communicating non-verbally. And I often see them do it with each other. They have these conversations that just don't have any nouns in them. They're just like, you know what I, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, because he came over here and he was like, you know, girl, I know. And I'm sitting there going like, no, what? What do you know? What language is this that they're speaking? So I find that it's interesting that, this dynamic is happening. And it's so draconian immediately the way that it's being applied. Doesn't seem like there's enough discussion about, there's not a discussion about toxic masculinity, and there's a lot of discussion about patriarchy, but there isn't enough discussion about what that has produced, whether it was man's fault or not. It still produced a particular culture for men and women that they have been using to the point where they think it's their nature. And it just may be, I don't know. And there isn't enough discussion about, okay, yeah, there's patriarchy, there's toxic masculinity. But what about women? What is it that women are, what are they bringing to this? Because it takes two to tango, right? So a lot of men, this whole toxic attribute to masculinity is new. Not that it's new in its reality, but it's just new in the label and new in the revelation of it. So we have to come to terms with that. So on the other side, we have to look at women now. What is it that women are doing? And they'll say, no, just because I put on this sexy dress was for me. No, you know, that sexy dress is a communicator. And you know that it is because you check yourself out in the mirror. You dress yourself a certain way because you're communicating. You know you look hot in that dress. And you go out, but the man is not supposed to say, repeat the communication that's supposed to say, hey, you look hot in that dress. Now that's an offense. And that has to be dealt with. It can't just be that women can do what they want, say what they want, give off the signals that they want, and it not be addressed. And not be addressed in how is a man supposed to take that, and that when they do it, it's just being done in a vacuum. That's just absolutely not fair. It will never get anywhere. If anything, it would just cause more frustration for the man. So I honestly think that if we're coming to this place, then women have to learn now and be encouraged to be more vocal and literally have to say, just because I put on this dress or just because I put on this negligee doesn't mean that I want your attention. They have to say it. Because it communicates something else. You know that the cut of that dress. If anyone in here is a designer of any kind, you know that when you create a certain angle, you make a certain cut on the body, that it's supposed to reveal a certain thing and give a certain message. That's what it's all about. That's what all this stuff is about. So that would have to absolutely be dealt with. And if anyone disagrees with me and just refuses to deal with it, this shit ain't going anywhere. You're just always going to have these same problems that I think these things absolutely need to be discussed. And women need to be honest about the fact that so much of their communication is non-verbal. And it has been for years. You're just supposed to get it. And I'm not saying every single woman. I'm saying in general, this is typically how women are noted to behave. It's even a feminine archetype, right? And if you don't know what an archetype is, you know, just Google it. Basically, it's just a symbol of something. Water is an archetype. You'll see the symbolisms of water in poetry and movies and music and things like that, right? So The symbolism of femininity tends to be subtle energy, internal energy, creative energy, mystery. All of these things are the feminine archetype, whereas the male archetype is everything that is external. It's usually, an outward energy. Not a mystery, but something that is known, knowledge. What else? Not subtle, but very straightforward, very cutting. That is the archetype of a masculine energy. Women can have, a female can have a masculine energy, and a man can have a feminine energy. And not overall, you know, the way that you do certain things as a man may have feminine attributes. For example, the way that you parent as a man may have more feminine, or teach, for example, was a more broader example. The way that you teach as a man may be more feminine than your female counterpart, who is more cutting and straightforward and would be considered a masculine way of teaching. So we have those different attributes, and if you're into spirituality, you definitely understand how men and women both have both energies mixing within them. Some would even say they mix into a third energy and all of that stuff. So that has to be dealt with. And if it's not dealt with, it won't move forward. Because another thing I was noticing that isn't dealt with is when we deal with sexuality with boys and girls, boys are immediately taught what to do with their sexuality. When a boy starts feeling his oats, starts feeling himself, he's told what to do. Hey, you gotta go get you some pussy. That's what they tell you. You're charged now. You're knighted. Boom, boom. Sir Dwayne of the Chase Catters, Cat Chasers, right? But the woman, the girl, is not told what to do with her sexuality. As a matter of fact, it's not spoken of. It's just saying, hey, you better not get pregnant. Okay, I'm not going to get pregnant, but what do I do with this feeling within me? I don't want to hear about it. Just keep your legs closed. Don't bring me no grandkids. That's what girls are taught. So you could have a girl who may be masculine, the masculine attribute now, in her sexuality. When it comes to sex, she might be very aggressive. She might have a very high libido, which is typically attributed to men. And this is a little girl, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, and she's got this thing raging inside of her that she can't control. No one wants to talk about it. They just tell her, don't get pregnant. Meanwhile, she's developing breasts and butt, and she's looking at Beyonce, and she's looking at this one, that one. They're twerking, and she wants to feel sexy, and she wants to feel her body, but there's a great fear that she will suddenly turn into a hoe. And no one's telling them what to do with their bodies, how to treat that, how to cope with that. It's the opposite of a boy. A boy run loose, take the leash off him, wah, gone. And whatever he does, whoever he wrecks in the aftermath, is just boys will be boys. Which is not good, right? It's unbridled sexual energy. So the boys, on one hand, need to be taught how to control their sexual energy in general. Because obviously some boys have no problems with that. Whereas the girls need to be taught about their sexuality, about their sex drive, because they're not taught about their sex drive. They're not taught about masturbation, any of that, you know, any of the things that, you know, how to handle, how to cope with it, and that it's actually normal if you have this feeling. It's normal if it's a really high libido. It's normal that you want to have sex. All of those things are normal, so you don't have to feel weird about it. And I just feel like that is never spoken of. The woman's libido is totally neglected, to the point where I was having a conversation with my sister yesterday, and she told me that women don't have a libido. That a woman's libido is in her marriage, meaning that sexual desire is not actually a sexual desire. It's just a desire for a man. To be with a man, to have a man there and be in a relationship. That's a woman's libido. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was just blown away, and not in a way that I go, is she a dummy? But I actually felt bad for her, because that means that my sister, who's 50 now, has spent her life, it seems to me, based on that conversation, thinking that she, that her libido, that sexual urge, is not really a sexual urge. It's just an urge for a man to have a man. But no, you want to have sex. You want to get fucked. Good. It's the truth. And women are not allowed to say that. And if you do say it, either you just crazy, something's wrong with you, depending on the culture that you're in and the friends that you have and that you're around. Well, I'm saying for these young girls, the babies, the ones who are coming up, that they have to get with their aunties and their cousins and the women in their life to really have deep discussions about female sexuality and libido. And that these girls have to be assured and confirmed and comforted in that, yes, you are a sexual being, but you're not just a sexual being. And yes, you're going to want to have sex just as much as these boys out here want to have sex. And the society has been developed. I mean, it's changing now. Like I said, we're in a transition now where you have polyamory and you have bisexuality and all kinds of things that this new generation is going to really have to navigate. But if we're not even dealing with feminine sexuality first, if we're not even dealing with feminine forms of communication historically, they're not going to be prepared. It's going to be a disaster for our kids coming up now, this next generation of kids coming up. So those things absolutely have to be addressed. And I had one last thing on my mind, and it's the, I forget what it was, actually. I had one more thing I wanted to talk about, man. All right, while I think about that, please make sure to hit me up on Instagram. I am at shaa.being.black. My Instagram is lit. People are coming in. You want to check it out. I put some really good stuff up there. You're going to go to my website, which is beingblackonearth.com. You'll see most of the stuff I put on Facebook ends up on there. I do write some articles and things that you might find interesting in there. My Twitter is super lit, and I have two Twitters. The best one, the one I'm trying to drive everyone to, obviously, is the one connected directly to the podcast. So it's Black on Earth. You'll find it at Black on Earth. Very lit, very witty. I'm an incredibly funny guy. And I really give it to these white supremacists and alt-right people, so you want to check it out. And then my new challenge right now is these ADOS folks, which I don't think are real. I think I'm actually talking to some paid bots and agents and whatnot. But I've already been blocked by, Antonio Moore and Yvette Carnell, and I've never even spoken to them directly. They just blocked me off. I'm not even sure what. So you want to check out my Twitter. My other Twitter is the Shay Good Guy account, which is SHAA_good guy, one word. Also pretty lit. I have the most followers on that. Still very witty. I saved the Being Black on Earth Twitter for more Afrocentric topics. And then the Shay Good Guy stuff is just more like mostly political and everything else in between. And then I also have my Facebook page, which is obviously facebook.com/beingblackonearth. And you can comment there. Obviously, let me know what you think of the podcast there. And if you want to contribute, like my boy Bombadelli Fuller did with the $5 plan, $5 a month plan, you can go either to anchor.fm/beingblackonearth. And you can also go to my Patreon page. Patreon, which is patreon.com/beingblackonearth. I really appreciate what you guys do, that you're all here listening to me. I really hope that it's helping. I hope it's adding something to your knowledge, sparking some things within you, and hopefully causing you to read more and research more, which I'm finding is a huge problem, like, especially being on Twitter, which I don't like. It's horrible because I'm on it constantly. So my kids are around, my wife is around, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I'm creating memes and I'm tweeting things, you know, just trying to market the podcast. And I end up getting into obvious debates with alt writers and ADOS people. And it's just amazing to me how people, how many people are literally just regurgitating something that they heard somewhere, or they literally just read like a title and didn't actually read, you know, the entire article, or didn't do any of this research on their own. So it's almost like you're having an argument with somebody, but you have to sort of educate them just to argue with them. And they say dumb things, like, just really dumb things that I'm like, man, you're arguing this thing with me as if it's not known. Like, some, for example, somebody was saying to me the other day on Instagram, in fact, they were saying, oh yeah, if the CIA brought crack into the black neighborhood, how come that would have been a huge conspiracy? There would have been whistleblowers. How could that have gone on without any whistleblowers? And I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, there was a guy that blew the whistle on all of that. There were all kinds of congressional meetings around this. There was a hearing on it, for God's sake, involving the President of the United States. Where the hell you been? You know, and then so then literally this particular argument, I literally gave that person articles to go look at. They spend probably 5 minutes reading those articles, and they get right back to me. Oh, well, it doesn't say that the CIA actually did it, you know, like the CIA, you know. I was like, what the hell is this? It's annoying as hell. But it's free marketing, so you can't avoid it. You have to do it. If you have a business, it's just like back in the day, you couldn't have a business without business cards and pamphlets and such. These days, hi, baby. What are you doing, baby? Who has to pee? Alade? Alade, you have to pee? Alade, do you have to pee? Alade, do you have to pee? Baby, come pee. Did you pee yourself? Yes, you did. You peed yourself, didn't you? You peed yourself, didn't you? Oh my God. Why didn't you come to the bathroom? What did you do with your panties, Alade? What did you do? You took off the panties you peed in? You gotta take it off. Take off your shoes. Take off your dress. You gotta take a nap. It's time for you to go to bed.
No.
Oh, yeah. It's time for her to go to bed. No. Anyways, let me get back to this parenting thing. What was I saying? People aren't informed. They're just not informed. They have these arguments. And I realize that they don't really know anything. They don't know much of anything. So, man, do your research. Do your research so you can know what's actually happening. If you don't do your research, when other things happen, for example, Candace Owens was in the news quite a bit because she was in the congressional hearing, and she was saying how white nationalism actually doesn't exist, and the biggest problem that they have right now is Antifa, and then she gives a personal experience that she had with Antifa. So on my Instagram post, I actually posted a video edited of Candace Owens saying everything that she's saying, what she has to say about white supremacy, what she has to say about the leftist media, and what she had to say about Antifa. And I put that up against an article from 1954 of, I want to say it was, I don't remember what his name was, because there's several articles like that. But he was a Republican congressman from Alabama. He says almost verbatim the exact same thing that Candace Owens says about the KKK. It's the same conversation, in the same order, with the same format. She says, white nationalism doesn't exist. It was invented by the leftist media. And that the real problem is Antifa. And then she gives a personal experience with Antifa. This same Republican representative says, I've never heard of the KKK. In fact, the only time I ever hear about the KKK is from northern newspapers, who the South at that time considered to be liberals. Think about that. And he goes on to say, but the real problem is SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He says they're the real problem, and then he gives a personal experience with them. You got to look at it. You got to find the article. I want to say the rep's name was Prentice Walker. Prentice, two S's at the end. I can't remember, but if you definitely go on my Instagram, you search through it, you find the Candace Owens joint. It's there. And it's amazing to see here, 54 years later, they're actually having the exact same discussion about white nationalism, and then you have a black woman giving the exact same answer and responses and story as a noted Jim Crow white nationalist, white supremacist. If you don't know your history, you won't link those two things together. Anybody who's listening to Candace Owens now, especially the applauding her applauding the things that she's saying at this meeting. How about if any one of them found out that the exact same thing was being said by a white nationalist, and probably a KKK member, 54 years ago, and that we're actually still having the same goddamn conversation, that nothing's changed. I have a hashtag, the times have never been better, and I mean that as a double entendre. The times have never been better. All this, you know, the good old days type of, you know, even I hear black people talking about the good old days. The good old days for who? The good old days when? You know what I mean? And it's all because these people are not doing their research. They do things like, they say things like, these socialists, they'll bring tyranny to our country. And Candace Owens, another one, said something about, one thing I know about America, we'll never be socialist. And what was the other thing? We'll never be socialist and we'll never something. I don't remember the other thing. And they're so frightened of this socialism. Frightened of socialism. Just because of literally two generations of socialist programs now. Not socialism, but socialist programs. Socialist programs like welfare, food stamps, Section 8, that kind of thing. These are socialist programs, not a socialist state. They're afraid of that. They hate that. When just 30 years, 50 years ago, they had actual tyranny. They had actual totalitarianism. For 250 years, they had actual tyranny. But they're afraid of socialism. And that's because they don't educate themselves. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But that's all I got to say. I gotta get back. That was just an update. Hope y'all like it. Hit me up. Shay Good Guy. We're all we've ever had. And we're all we've got. Be good to yourselves. Be good to one another. Peace. When I'm not hosting a podcast as your fam and friendly neighborhood good guy, I'm a freelance illustrator and graphic designer. In the field since 2013, I've worked for small businesses and multi-million-dollar companies. I like to work closely with my clients to produce a quality service. I specialize in logos, layouts, posters, and pamphlets, but I also do t-shirt designs, business cards, websites, and many other multimedia services. Although I have big business clients, I like to focus on small businesses and nonprofits who work with a small budget yet benefit from great design. In addition, I teach multimedia workshops for young people to get them ahead of the game in this technical age. Call 305-209-7894. Ask for Shay. I work local and long distance.
Man, I'm just out here being.
Yeah. I'm sure they would have done something.
I'm being black.
Beautiful with that.
And now.
And everything. Just.
I'm sure they would have done
everything that it means to be black.